Good evening, friends. This is your host on Valley Writers Read, Franz Weinschenk, welcoming you to another program where only the folks who live right here in the Valley get to read their stories. And tonight, another story by a popular Valley writer by the name of Jim Benelli. So did you ever wonder what happens to those huge loads of tomatoes just freshly picked in and around Salinas on their way back east? Well, tonight you're going to find out as Jim Benelli reads a story of his entitled Big Joe and the Red-Headed Hitchhiker. Here he is, Jim Benelli reading Big Joe and the Red-Headed Hitchhiker.
On my heel, trying to find me something better here on the streets of Bakersfield.
Big Joe and the Red-Headed Hitchhiker. The summer sun was sinking behind the hazy California mountains as Big Joe eased the Kenworth around another of the endless hairpin turns coming out of Bakersfield. He was finally heading downhill and into the blue haze of the Mojave Desert ahead. He slid his new Buck Owens tape into the 8-track and hoped that just maybe Buck and the Buckaroos would help him forget the crappy day he wasted in California. His first trip to the Golden State had been anything but golden. Actually, he had been in California before when he was mustered out of the Navy in Frisco back in 46. This was his first time since he began trucking a couple years back. He had been stuck with driving local runs in the Midwest until the boss, his new boss that is, called him into the office last week and offered him the West Coast run. He had not worked for this company long. He was fired from his last driving job due to his love of beer. He promised his latest girlfriend that he would stay out of the joints that kept leading him astray. He would straighten up and save some money. And they would get married as soon as he could save up $500. So far, he was doing pretty good, but he had not given up Budweiser completely. He knew he could stop any time. The 100-degree wind blowing in the open windows barely dried the sweat off Big Joe's face. His shirt was dirty. It was damp from sweat and smelled like diesel fuel. He was dead tired, but he had no time to rest. He stuck another lucky strike in a corner of his sweaty mouth, flicked his Zippo lighter, and slowly exhaled the sweet smoke out of his window. Wishing for a cold beer did not help. He could not afford to lose this job, and he wanted to keep his promise. The day had gotten off to a rotten start early in Salinas, and then just got worse. He had parked his rig in front of the produce dock, hoping to be the first load in the morning. But that smart aleck of a foreman told him that 4 trucks from last night would get loaded first. Big Joe blew his cool right there on the dock, calling the foreman some names, fortunately under his breath, and throwing his cap down and stomping on it. And that did not lend any speed to the process of loading 20 tons of tomatoes bound for St. Louis. And then Bakersfield. Damn that godforsaken town and their stinking motorcycle cops. Busted for doing 40 and a 30 on Highway 66, no less. Finally, Big Joe's rig was rolling east, through junkyards and crummy little motels. Oil derricks lined the 2-lane ribbon of concrete that unfolds as far as the eye can see to the east. Bordered on the north by the railroad tracks, and on the south by desert sand, blue sage and cactus. The big Route 66 led east and away from California. Highway 66 was the artery that carried the lifeblood of the east to California and back again. The land of dreams, and this lousy highway held no fascination for Joe. He just wanted to put the miles behind him and get this trip over with. This was only Joe's second long trip for this fly-by-night company. He had worked less than a month, so he got the oldest rig in the fleet. The other guys' trucks all had them new air conditioners, radios, and comfortable seats. This piece of junk had nothing but windows to force the hot wind into the cab. Dead tired already, and it's not even dark yet. The Buck Owens tape was starting over for the third time when he hit the eject button. He tried to get a station on his transistor radio, but found only static. If he could only get back to St. Louis and Marie. He wanted out of California. It was hot and crowded, and a hamburger cost a dollar. He could hardly believe the prices they charged. They seemed to have it in for Missouri folks. Joe was a big guy, tipping the scales at about 220, and his grimy T-shirt did little to flatter his beer gut. His face was wrinkled and puffy, reflecting the history of an early life at sea, and more recently, a difficulty adapting to dry land. Trucking seemed to be Big Joe's calling. It didn't take long to learn, and anyway, he was never happy staying in the same place too long. He had to keep moving. His left arm was tanned a golden brown and tough as shoe leather from hanging out the window, while his right arm was a much lighter shade of tan. A dirty baseball cap with a Peterbilt logo was the only remnant of his last job. His last paycheck was held up for some reason that was beyond Joe's narrow range of understanding. He was never any good at that sort of thing. The ribbon of concrete started a lazy turn to the left, and the rig was coasting easily from the last hill, when Joe suddenly jerked his eyes open and realized that he had started to nod off. He knew he could not let this happen. "Fight it off, Joe. Don't do that no more," he was talking to himself. Ahead, on the side of the road, the last rays of sunshine illuminated a tall, slender figure of a man. Maybe someone to talk to will help. Now, the company had strict rules against hitchhikers, but out here in the desert, nobody will know. He geared down, third, second, then first, pushing the big clutch between each downshift. Slowing down just a little piece past the man, he brought the rig to a full stop. The air brakes let out a whoosh and blew a puff of dust away from the wheels. The tall figure trotted to catch up to the truck. He had no pack or bag of any kind. As he climbed up to the cab, Joe flicked on the overhead light to see what he had picked up. He was immediately struck by the young man's flaming red hair. It was messed up, uncombed and uncut, and sticking out in every direction. The same red as the tomatoes in his rig. His blue Levi's and white T-shirt were wrinkled and sweaty. He looked very tired and pale, even though this was the Mojave Desert. "Climb on aboard, good buddy. I need somebody to chew the fat with and keep me company. The name's Joe. They call me Big Joe." The lucky strike never left Joe's mouth. It just wiggled up and down as he talked. He reached his big fat hand over to the new passenger, but the stranger did not respond. He was looking out of his window and said nothing. "Where are you heading, anyway?" "Barstow. Maybe farther." His voice was nearly drowned out as the rig was shifted to third and headed down the long downhill straightaway with clear sailing ahead. "They call me Red," he mumbled, avoiding eye contact. The conversation dragged on, but slowly got better. The road was monotonous and boring. A few cheap motels, some junky signs advertising gas for a quarter, diesel at 17. The sign at a gas station said, "Too stiff selling gas." Then there was yet another set of Burmese signs. Big Joe barely noticed the small black and white sign saying, "Tehachapi, Men's Prison." Highway 66 stretched out as far as Joe's eyes could see. A few cars and trucks and the big Santa Fe diesel streamlined locomotive pulling the city of San Francisco rolled by, heading west with the luxury Vista Dome cars at the rear. Man, that there must be the way rich folks travel. "Never been on one myself, have you?" Red just mumbled something and said, "No." Big Joe was never very swift about things going on around him. He punched his new Buck Owens in the 8-track and sang along with the Buckaroos to "I Got a Tiger by the Tail." The blistering California sun was slowly sinking behind the foothills and shining right into Big Joe's eyes, reflecting from the Kenworth side mirrors. He reached out and turned the mirror slightly. That's when he noticed the passenger side mirror was shining in on the hitchhiker's brilliant tomato-red mop of hair, making it almost glow. "Where are you coming from, my friend? Have you been traveling long?" "I have. Very long." "Very, very long," was the ambiguous reply, telling Joe nothing. "I have come a long way, but I will soon see my son in Barstow." "Got a kid in Barstow, have you?" asked Joe. "Maybe this next tune will make you feel a little better." The next tune up on the tape was "Together Again." Joe had heard the tunes just a few times, but he had kind of a knack for remembering songs. He had always wished he could be a country singer, but his voice was just raspy and hoarse. He hummed along with the song and knew some of the words. "Together again, blue skies are gone." He knew that much but couldn't go on. Red picked it up and sang, "You're back in my arms and nothing else matters." The sun had set now, and the air had started to cool, if only by tiny degrees. The redhead kept to himself, hardly said a word. That was not like Joe. He was a talker. Always talking. That way he didn't have to think much. He was never too good at thinking things out. More of a guy to talk first and think later. He turned the brand new 8-track player up. Buck and the Buckaroos were belting out "Streets of Bakersfield." "I came here looking for something I couldn't find anywhere else." The lyrics seemed much too real. Red listened and sang the next line. "Well, I don't want to be nobody, just want a chance to be myself." Big Joe never knew anybody that could sing Buck Owens songs. "Man, I wish I could learn them songs. How do you do that?" "Heard them many times, Joe." Every song that came up from Buck and the Buckaroos from then on, Red could sing. He knew every word, and his voice blended in perfectly with the tape. He knew when to sing and when to let Buck come in with the guitar solo and the full band accompaniment. The beat was consistent and never compromised. Joe was amazed, but he failed to grasp the meaning. They say someday this here highway is going to be a 4-laner all the way to Chicago. "But I'll never believe it till I see it for my own eyes," grumbled the big guy, as he turned off to another detour around a construction project. He had snapped out of the sleepiness that had hit him earlier and liked having read along, although most of the time he talked gibberish. Not only is this highway going to be a four-laner all the way to Chicago, but this section coming out of Bakersfield will be lined with windmills generating electricity. Joe just kind of looked at the redhead and smiled. He knew that everybody in California smoked LSD and marijuana, but he had never seen it with his own eyes. It was amazing. This guy looked perfectly normal in every way, but he could see windmills. Actually, come to think of it, he did not look completely normal. The bright red hair looked strange to Big Joe. It kind of had a day glow cast to it. And why was the redhead so pale and white? Living out here in the middle of the Mojave Desert, where the sun is red hot and the afternoons are over 100 degrees? What was he doing here in the first place? How did he get here? Where did he come from? Joe thought to himself, I might be a little dumb, but I sure ain't stupid. The wheels in his head rotated slowly, but they were turning, and somehow there was a picture starting to come together. It was vague and made no sense yet, but he had the feeling this story just did not add up. Joe was getting smarter, but it was happening slowly and steadily. Tehachapi Men's Prison. That has got to be it. There ain't no other way this guy could get where he was when I picked him up. Joe could see it now. How could he have been so dumb before? 50 miles had gone by, and he had been so busy shifting gears to realize he had an escaped con in his truck with him. It was plain as day. Why didn't he see it sooner? It ain't no wonder he's so pale. They don't get no sun in the joint. Buck Owens was playing the Streets of Bakersfield, and Red was singing along. He knew all the words, probably learned them in prison, Joe figured. That's it. He had time to learn them all in a slammer. Nothing else to do, just sit there and think about the words. He was probably a murderer or something. That had to be it. Joe very carefully slid his hand down under the seat. He moved it so slow that Red would not even notice that it was not on the wheel. He slid it under the seat and felt in his little overnight bag. Slowly he worked the zipper open and was able to squeeze 2 fingers inside the bag. It was still there. Joe's big left hand was trembling, and it was covered with sweat. His right hand never left the steering wheel. His eyes remained fixed on the road. Carrying a gun on a company rig is against the company's rules. Joe knew he could be fired for that, not to mention having an escape con on the truck. He was really in a bad fix now, and things were getting worse. Red could grab him at any minute and kill him, or wreck the truck, or anything. He probably has a homemade knife in his pants. That's how he escaped. Probably murdered the guards to escape. That must be it. He could kill me any minute. I'm sure of it. I could pull out my pistol and shoot him before he has a chance to go for his knife. That's what I'll do, Joe thought to himself. I'll wait till it gets darker and he can't see me. Then I'll go for my gun and I'll shoot him before he can stab me with his knife. It will be over so quick he won't know what hit him. But how will I explain it to my boss? I ain't supposed to pick up no hitchhikers in the first place, and I ain't supposed to have no gun. I'll say he jumped me at a gas station, that's what I'll say. They won't know the difference. No, it ain't going to work. They'll figure I was lying, and they'd be right. I ain't no good at lying. But how about a reward? If I can capture an escaped murderer, there's got to be a big reward, maybe $10,000, maybe more, depending on how many killed. Surely enough to buy my own rig. All I got to do is capture him and turn him over to the cops, and they'll give me the money. That's all there is to it. The Buckaroos were singing Truck Stop at the End of the World. Sweat was beating up on Big Joe's face, even though the evening air was cooling rapidly. Ain't nothing left under that cloud of green gas. Got my rig wound up and we're hauling ass, went the song. To the truck stop at the end of the world. Joe's mind was made up. He'd pull his gun on Red, surprise the crap out of him when he was dozing, and get him. Joe waited and waited. The time would come. He was a patient man, or so he told himself. But he wasn't that patient. He had to do it soon. He had to go to the bathroom more and more as time wore on. He had better hurry and get it over with pretty soon. The truck was in second gear, and he was climbing yet another slight hill and turning left onto the old two-lane. Red was dozing off and on. His head was nodding. The cool night air was cooling Joe's sweat, and he was suddenly bathed in a strange calmness. His thoughts were cool and deliberate. He was a calculating animal ready to spring the trap at any moment, but he waited. He had only one chance, and it had to be right. His very life would depend on this outcome. He rehearsed it in his mind, over and over. What if he had to shoot? He had never shot anything larger than a rabbit. How would it feel to see a man die? Blood would splatter everywhere. What if Red made a grab at the wheel? Red nodded off. He was very tired. Joe quietly slipped his hand on his gun. In a split second, it was out of his bag, and he pulled it up between the door and the seat. Quietly, he brought it level, aiming directly at the redhead. "Get them hands up, Red. The jig's over." His voice scared himself, and jolted Red's head straight up. Joe's eyes were big as saucers. Red raised his hands obligingly and smiled. Joe was dead serious. His gun was shaking and his hands were sweating profusely. Sweat ran down his face. His armpits were dripping. The truck was still in second gear, even though he had crested this light hill. Joe pressed on a clutch but did not have a hand to shift gears. He aimed his big six-shooter directly at Red's face. "Shift it to third," he shouted. Red obeyed the order grudgingly. "Don't shoot, Joe. I'm not going to do anything. And you don't want to cause a wreck." "I ain't going to wreck. You just don't do nothing fancy and nobody's going to get hurt," Joe barked. Red smiled but obeyed. Traffic had slacked off quite a bit now, just a car now and then. One car was passing them. Joe lowered the gun and told Red to put his hands on the dashboard where he could see them. Red did as he was told. A truck stop was coming into view up ahead, but it was on the wrong side, and they were on a divided section with a shallow ditch separating the lanes. There was nothing else in sight for miles ahead. It was now or never. He had to act. A feeling of calm bravery soothed Joe. There was no traffic coming from the opposite direction. The truck stop was dead center in the windshield. With a sudden adrenaline rush, Joe held the gun on the hitchhiker with his left hand and wheeled the big rig sharply to the left with his right. The truck left the highway at over 50 miles an hour and smashed into the shallow ditch that divided the lanes. The cab bounced into the air, throwing Joe and Red to the roof and slamming them back into the seat unmercifully. Joe steered the rig expertly through some bushes, between two trees and onto the approach to the station. He slammed on the brakes, skidding all 18 wheels and jackknifing the trailer. People, what few there were, ran in every direction. Tomatoes spilled out of the open door and rolled down the highway in every direction. The rig finally ground to a halt. The air brake sighed a big sigh of relief and blew dust off the driveway. Joe backed out of the door, never once taking his eyes off the captive. His hands were shaking uncontrollably. He shouted to Red, "Don't move or you're dead." Red remained completely calm, with just a slight smile breaking his pale face. His hair was mussed up and he smoothed it back in place, but otherwise he did not move. Joe walked to the front of the truck where he could see both doors. He shouted to another customer who was white as a sheet to call the sheriff's office and tell them they had captured an escaped convict from Tehachapi, and hurry. Within minutes, although it seemed like hours to Joe, sirens could be heard coming from all directions. Soon red lights were flashing as both sheriff's deputies and highway patrolmen screeched to stops and were out of their cars with all guns drawn and ready to fire. They surrounded the truck and commanded Joe to lay down his gun. He obeyed. "What's going on here?" they shouted. "He's in the truck, an escaped con. I picked him up near Tehachapi," shouted Joe, his voice breaking and he was shaking violently. "He's in the truck." Officers mounted both sides of the truck, pointing their guns in the windows. There was no one inside. They climbed in the cab and searched it completely. There was no one there. Joe could not believe his eyes. He had watched the truck himself since it stopped. Red did not leave the truck. It just could not be. He sat down on the pavement and sobbed. A sheriff's officer asked him to sit down in his patrol car and tell him what happened. He would start his report. Joe started at the very first with picking up the red-headed hitchhiker near the Tehachapi State Prison. By the time Joe got to the part where the hitchhiker knew all the Buck Owens songs, the officer scratched his head. It sounded familiar. Something like this had been reported before. No prisoners had escaped from Tehachapi. A woman had reported that she had seen Red Farley, the lead singer in Buck Owens' band. She insisted it was him. She had seen him before in a concert in Bakersfield. She had been drinking and was escorted to the county jail. A week later, a man walking near here reported that he had seen and talked to Farley. He is a local Baptist preacher. He did not drink. He reported that Farley was trying to get to Barstow. Red Farley had been killed a year earlier in a car accident. He had just finished a gig in Bakersfield and was on his way to Barstow.
"I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail."
That was Jim Benelli reading Big Joe and the Red-Headed Hitchhiker. And so, as we heard, here's Big Joe, a beer-drinking, Buck Owens-loving, big-rig truck driver who starts out with a huge load of tomatoes from Salinas on his way to St. Louis. And before we know it, he's driving east out into the hot dry Mojave Desert when he picks up a red-headed hitchhiker not all that far from the men's prison near Tehachapi. Curiously, the mysterious red-headed hitchhiker knows all the songs on the truck driver's Buck Owens tape, but somehow Joe starts believing that maybe the guy's an escapee from the prison. He fumbles for his gun, thinking that he might have the guy arrested, which could lead to a big reward. It's at this point that he crashes into a service station, but when the sheriff and highway patrol arrive, well, there's nobody in the cab of the truck at all. The redhead who had sat next to him for all that time has just disappeared. And although our author never tells us, we have to believe that evidently the hitchhiker was an illusion, a figment in Joe's imagination. Incidentally, doesn't everybody know that Red Farley was killed in a car accident about a year ago? And yet, both a woman and a local Baptist minister reported that they too had sighted Red Farley on that same road just recently. So what do you think? Thank you, Jim Benelli, for such a mysterious story. Friends, Jim Benelli, who is a retired airline pilot, currently lives up in the small foothill community of Aubrey. He recently published a book entitled Ski Tales, The History of China Peak and Sierra Summit. We certainly thank him for tonight's intriguing story and hope that he's busy writing more of his fine literary prose for seasons to come. And so we come to the close of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to listen to tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story again, just get online at kvpr.org and click on to Valley Writers Read. Next week, our writer-reader will be Valerie Schulz. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.